Hello and welcome to the HMEB podcast. I'm your host, David Cuff, the executive editor of HME Business, your source for news, trends, and insights into the home medical equipment industry. As with other facets of U.S. healthcare and really the nation itself, COVID-19 is impacting the HME industry in a big way, so you can expect the HME Business podcast to devote a considerable amount of coverage on how the industry is responding. To kick that coverage off, I look at the safety, care, staffing, and operations measures one East Coast provider has implemented so far to prepare his business to keep caring for patients.
I'm here today talking with Gary Sheehan. He's the president and CEO of Cape Medical Supply, headquartered in Cape Cod, but it's got locations that serve Massachusetts and Rhode Island and New Hampshire. And we're talking about what he did or is doing so far at his business to prepare for COVID-19 and deal with the pandemic. Gary, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Dave, as well as could be expected given the environment that we're in here. But it's good to talk to you.
Exactly. Good to talk to you, too. And I guess, you know, when, you know, before all this sort of really made its effects felt, were you already thinking about this? Did you already have kind of chief concerns that you were thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, we've been sort of loosely monitoring the situation for a couple months now. I'd say more as a citizen than a CEO, but I think as sort of February rolled on into March, I think the situation in Italy really started to give us significant pause and concern. And then as we looked at the way that the you know, U.S. was tracking in terms of cases, and it very much seemed to be on that same Italian curve, we snapped into action very quickly at that point. It was a week ago, it was 8 days ago, we made our major sort of operational decisions about how we were going to handle things. And 8 days ago, it really feels like 8 months ago now, but
wow.
Very confident. The decisions that we made and the protections that we put in place for both our patients and our team members.
So I'm curious, you know, before we talk about some of the things that you guys have done so far, were there certain segments within the patients that you serve that you were most worried about?
Yeah, I mean, we've really tailored our product and service offerings at this point. We are basically just a sleep provider at this point. So We're not servicing sort of higher acuity patients, vent patients, oxygen patients. There are clearly patients within that sleep category that are a little bit higher acuity or BiPAP-related services. But no, we didn't really, you know, cut it in terms of, you know, who the patients were, that they were these higher acuity groups. We made a universal decision right away.
Got it. And what were some of these universal measures that you felt were sort of priority items?
Yeah, so last week we made the announcement that we would be closing all of our facilities to outside visitors. We would be working on the guidance of the Health and Human Services leadership in Massachusetts. You know, they came out with some pretty specific guidance very early on that we elected to follow, and that was really around minimizing face-to-face contact and using technology where it was available to provide patient services. So we have a pretty robust technology infrastructure, nothing crazy, but VoIP phone systems, you know, patient app, and, you know, different portals and things that allow us to work pretty effectively in a remote fashion. So we also did a phased work from home policy for our people. We will be down to about by Monday. Right now we're at about 80-85% of our people are at home. By Monday we'll be at probably 90% of our teams working from home, and they're very much functionally working from home. They've got their multiple monitors set up, they have their phones, they are logged into their call queues, they are actively working with our patients and partners to ensure that they get what they need. For all new setups, we've moved to a shipment of the setup model. So there's a telephonic consult prior to shipment. We then leverage kind of some off-the-shelf signature stuff to get what's needed from a regulatory point of view and a billing point of view. We then drop those units out, and then we have a telephonic consult on the back end. Those units are set by a respiratory therapist in our warehouse, and then the consults on the back end are also done with a respiratory therapist. So not, you know, look, I think our objective here is to minimize the risk to our patients and team members while ensuring, you know, uninterrupted service. Is that service delivered in, you know, the same fashion that it normally is? No. But we're interested to see over time what the numbers look like here in terms of refits and guarantees and compliance rate and things like that. How much of a slippage in performance is there operating under this sort of revised model? We're very curious to see that. I think we acted early. I think there were even some people internally who were kind of like, what? This sort of feels like an overreaction. Nobody feels that way now.
Definitely. I don't think you were overreacting there, Gary. You know, I'm curious, hearing about your use of technology and hearing about, the way that you're doing setups and everything and with over-the-phone consultation and all that, I'm curious, are you thinking that you might see new business models and new operational models emerge out of this situation?
I mean, we'll see. The payers are reacting very quickly to relax a lot of their requirements and regulations. I think we're all looking at the steps that some of these insurance companies have made us take over the last 10 years and revisiting and removing a lot of those. They're a barrier to the delivery of quality care, plain and simple. Mm-hmm. And I think it's taken a pandemic for them to realize it, how much, you know, how strictly they re-implement some of those requirements will dictate how we can operate. But our goal is to deliver patient care and a patient experience that is that meets the patient's needs, requirements, and expectations. So for many patients, I think that will always mean a face-to-face visit with a respiratory therapist, sort of business, doing business as business has always been done. Mm-hmm. I do think, you know, in the future, there are patients who would prefer, because of their own, you know, work and travel and family, to not have to do that. And if we can meet them where they want to be and we can leverage technology in new and interesting ways to help them, you know, orient to therapy under a different operating model, you know, we're going to want to explore that. So I don't think it's about a mandate that we, you know, we're now a drop shipping company versus, you know, a clinically focused company, but it does mean that we should be trying to do things the way that our patients want them done. And, you know, we'll see coming out of this what the operating model looks like and what's sort of permitted or allowed by the regulatory environment and the insurance companies.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to your payer mix, you mentioned that, you know, a lot of kind of requirements have been relaxed and that kind of stuff. What's been your sense? You know, are the private payers a little bit more understanding than, say, Medicare, Medicaid, or is everybody kind of going, yeah, we need to just kind of expedite? What's kind of your take on how the different sort of spheres of payers are behaving during this situation?
Yeah, so I mean, I've been in the industry for 18 years now. I have never seen such swift universal action by payers of all stripes. We had our first conversations with commercial payers 8 days ago who were incredibly supportive of the plan, sort of, geez, we never thought of that. That's awesome that you'll be able to do that for our patients, by all means. Medicaid has since come out and taken a similar position. I think you've seen a relaxation of standards from Medicare along the way. So I think, look, everybody within the healthcare space recognizes the gravity of the situation and has recognized it. I think you had a lot of naysayers out there. It's the flu or it's the common cold or, you know, it's this is going to go away. I think folks, you know, within healthcare are a little bit more oriented to science. And I think that they've been known for a while that we had a real problem on our hands, and I think that they knew that the operating environment had to change drastically and quickly. So they have all been very supportive and appreciative of this, and It's been refreshing to have. It feels like we're all on the same team, and it doesn't normally feel that way.
There you go. Well, at least everybody's being collegial. What about going forward? Are there more things that you want to do to implement, either from, you know, a patient/customer care perspective, or from an employee protection perspective, or do you think your ducks are fairly in a row at this point?
Yeah, we went pretty far pretty fast in reaction to this. So, right now our focus is having enough people in here. We do service. We are kind of a component of our hospital supply chains with respect to the bracing. So we do still have an individual who is visiting hospital emergency departments and stocking and restocking. That is getting dicier seemingly by the hour. And then in-house, we've got just a couple of very skeleton crew. It's very strange, David. I will tell you, to be in our building, we're in our headquarters is probably a 15,000 square foot building. Right now, I think we have 12 people here. Next week, it'll probably be down to 8.
Jeez Louise.
So it's pretty eerie, but we've got enough people to do our pick, pack, ship operations. For our resupply patients, they are ordering and service continues uninterrupted, and then we're setting and shipping fairly high volume of machines every day out to new patients. And then we've got, you know, our team members are in their homes with their families, and they're logged in and, you know, providing service and clicking away. But, we just don't have, you know, we do have redundancies if something were to happen here. But we've pretty much gone as far as we can go. And we're happy because we, you know, you learn lessons early on what are the challenges of operating in this fashion? What are the things in the system that need to be ironed out? We've been learning, you know, we've been learning now for 4.5 days. We've got some remaining learning to happen this afternoon, and then, we'll modify things over the weekend.
There you go. So talking about lessons, if you had to kind of bulletize any sort of key lessons that you want to share with your fellow providers out there who might be, still coming to terms with this, what would they be?
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, it just assume that it is going to get dramatically worse. I mean, we are building hospitals in soccer fields in the state of Washington. That is likely to happen elsewhere. The situation on the ground in Massachusetts is scary. Frontline healthcare workers are running out of PPE already, and the situation has yet to peak. So what seems like an overreaction today will seem like an underreaction maybe as soon as tomorrow. So consider the worst case scenario. Work very quickly to modify your operations to function in a worst case scenario. And to me, this is a galvanizing moment for our industry. If we react the way that we can and that we should, we will retain a vital component of the healthcare supply chain. If we don't take action fast enough, we stand to put our patients at risk, our team members at risk, and, you know, miss an opportunity to provide value service to a, frankly, to an acute care system that is about to come under just unprecedented pressure. So I just urge people to just, I think this is the once in a generation moment that we need to prepare ourselves for. You know, we need to be ready to operate in that world. And look, we have a luxury that many others don't, in that, you know, we are able to limit our trucks on the road. We don't have oxygen patients and ventilator patients. And I just, you know, figure out what you need to do to take care of those people, and what equipment you need in terms of, you know, supply chain and personal protective equipment and, you know, all those things, and get ready, because I think it's about to be, you know, it's about to get a little bit scary out there, David. I guess I don't really know how else to put it.
Well, scary, but it sounds like things, you have things in hand, and certainly I think this is going to be a learning curve that the entire industry is sort of ascending at the same time. And so really appreciate you taking the time to offer some insight and share your experience.
Yeah, great to connect, David, as always. And to that end, you know, to your point there, I've seen a lot of really wonderful collaboration across the industry, people sharing policies and decisions and rationalizations. So this is a time for us all to come together as an industry, prove our value to the healthcare continuum, and do what we can to support one another and get through this and come out the other side having taken care of our patients in a fashion that we should all, you know, we can all be proud of.
Amen to that. Kudos to Gary for his outlook, and thanks to him for sharing some of the measures and procedures Cape Medical Supply has implemented. Here's hoping that what he outlined can help some of the other providers out there in the industry. All right, that'll close things up for this episode. But again, you can expect more from us in terms of COVID-19 coverage. Don't forget to rate and review the HME Business Podcast. And please, if you haven't already, make sure to click the subscribe button so that you get every new episode. Remember, you keep listening and we'll keep posting. And if you want to stay on top of everything that's happening in the industry, including COVID-19, make sure to check out hme-business.com and subscribe to eSource, our weekly e-newsletter service there. And if you haven't already done so, make sure to subscribe to the print magazine there as well. Again, that's hme-business.com. Of course, you can follow us on social media. We're at HME Business on both Facebook and Twitter, and I'm at Post Acute News on Twitter. Lastly, if you have any feedback, suggestions, or requests, don't be afraid to reach out to me via Twitter. Again, that's at Post News, or you can hit me up via email at dkopf@1105media.com. Thank you all very much for listening. The HME industry has gone through a lot, so I'm convinced we'll get through COVID-19. But for now, goodbye until the next HMEB podcast.